Hey, good morning, everyone. We have the privilege of learning together the first Aliyah in Parshas Vayera. Our learning and the week of learning is sponsored by Nathan Dina and David Repan, and grandchildren in loving memory of Judy Becker Repan, Yehudit Bat Nissan. Our learning is to serve as an Eloi for her neshama, Began Eden Shel Mala. We're going to begin with a few thoughts from Rabbi Soloveitchik. If you do not own this chumash, it's an imperative. It's not like a nice thing. You got to get this chumash. And you're going to say, oh, Rabbi Soloveitchik talks in like flowery, very difficult language. No, no, no. What they did here, it's so brilliant. It's called the Mesoros HaRav Chumash. It's 5 volumes. They finished it 2 years ago. They took everything that the Rav wrote, everything, literally, and they cut it down. So these two paragraphs apply to Parshas Vayera, boom, they put it in. And the other two apply to B'Shalach. It's so concise, so beautiful. So you'll have plenty to say at the Shabbos table every single week for many, many years. For many, many years. Look at my bracious. It's like torn up already because it's so great. It's so great.
Who wrote it? Who put it together?
Who put it together? I think Arnie Lustiger put it together Dr. Arnie Lustiger. The OU is the one that printed it. I believe Rabbi J.D. Schachter was involved in it. Rabbi Ganek was involved in it. Rabbi Ganek from the OU put it together, was involved as well. Yeah. So let's begin. He makes a few different amazing thoughts. So Vayera Elav Hashem. This is the scene. This is one of the most famous opening scenes to any parasha in the entire Torah, right? Avram is sitting after the Bris Milah. It's day 3. The thing is, Bereshis, the scene of Bereshis, we don't even know what the scene is. What was it? It looked like nothing, right? Well, what was it? So here, there's a scene. Avram is sitting, kichom hayom. It's very, very hot outside. It's hot outside. It's a day 3 of the Bris Milah. Avram's in pain. And who comes to him? HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The ultimate guest, right? We'll see. Is God the ultimate guest? Or is God the ultimate host? Vayera Elav Hashem. God appears to Avraham, says Rabbi Soloveitchik. What's missing from this pasuk? And then they have a conversation, right? And then Vayisa ina Vayar, then Avraham opens up his eyes and he sees 3 men that are approaching him, and Avraham runs out to greet them, and we have Avraham's not just the master of Chesed, but he's the master of Hachnasas Orchim. He leaves God on the side, right to the side. He pauses the conversation with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, engages in chesed with these malachim. They tell him certain things about Sodom. They don't talk about Sodom. They tell him about Sarah. Mazel tov, you can have a child. They talk, etc. And then God comes back to him and they continue the conversation later. And that is where Hashem tells him about Sodom. Each one of the malachim had their own task. What they're going to do, one of them to save Lot, one of them was to heal Avraham, one of them was to tell them the news that Sarah was going to have a child. But Rabbi Soloveitchik makes the following point. He says, the Torah doesn't, right, whenever we have this this engagement or a dialogue between two people, how does the conversation begin? Vayomer, right? And then you could say, okay, then they got cut off by the Malachim and they didn't speak. So the or Vayidaber Hashem el Avraham Lemor, Vayomer Hashem el Avraham. There's no Vayomer, there's no Vayidaber here. It's just that God appears to Avraham. Now why is that? So he says that the relationship that a Kadosh Baruch Hu had with Avraham at this point in his life, at this stage in Avraham's development, was not formal. Right? It was not formal. Think about when somebody begins to date their eventual wife, right? So in the beginning, right? You're still chassan, right? We're in the beginning, it's very formal. Maybe you have to go through the shadchan. No one here probably experienced that part, but I needed to. But you have to go through the shadchan, and then that wall is broken down. Now we can speak to each other directly. We call each other. Maybe then we begin texting, right? And then eventually becomes the point where like, this is not good either, but husband and wife don't even say hello anymore. Just like, did you? When are you coming home?
What? I didn't text my wife.
You didn't text your wife when you met. Okay, okay. Not everybody's okay. Not everybody's okay. Alexander Graham Bell was in your class. So
smoke signals.
The Rav points out over here is that there was no dialogue, there's no initiation of dialogue between Avraham and Hashem, because he writes, the highest form of friendship does not require words. They don't need an introduction to say hello, because the highest form of friendship is you just pick up where you left off. Right? And I'm sure so many of us have friends like this that we haven't seen. You know, we don't maybe keep in touch with them, you know, from year to year, from day to day. But they've been our friends for decades. And we could literally sit back down together and just pick up the conversation where we left off, you know, last time. Oh, the kids, the grandchildren, the, you know, the business, the this, that. What am I learning? You know, be able to pick it up. That's the highest form of friendship. That there's always this constant dialogue between between the two parties. And that's what the Rav points out. Avram and Hashem and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they had this relationship. It didn't need to be, hello, how are you? Can we speak? Do you have time? No, we're just going to, right? And you see, even as we form friends, even later in life, usually is, can we speak now? Do you have time? And then it gets to a point where, hey, the barriers are broken down and we have this continuous relationship, you know, where things are even more intimate. And that's, I think, such a beautiful idea. Such a beautiful idea. And Rav Kook actually takes this a step further. I quoted this a few weeks ago in the Shabbos Shuvah Drasha. Rav Kook writes about us, and the Kaddish Baruch Hu in davening. So when it comes to davening, our souls are always davening. Our souls are always, we have this formal, formulaic way, and we're learning about tefillah on Tuesdays. But really, when it comes to our tefillah itself, we're always davening. Always not. It is a constant, continuous conversation that we have with the Kaddish Baruch Hu. And I think this is beautiful. We can appreciate this in the relationships that we have. Sometimes it's very important to be formal, sometimes too, even in the informal relationships. But we should appreciate this with the friends that we have and the people that we share this with, the intimate moments of not being formal, Because those are the people that we're generally closer with, right? When you have your friends over, just think of, right? Your closest friends, you have them over for a Friday night meal. You've had them over hundreds of times, probably for Friday night meal. You had them over. Do you need to get out all the fancy stuff? No. Okay, it's in the tins. It's on the table, you know? There's something special about that. I think also that's what's special a little bit at Sukkos. On Sukkos too, you know, you're outside. You want to, maybe you want to get the china dirt. But it's like, it's intimate with a Kaddish Baruch Hu. You don't need, it doesn't need to be, doesn't need to be so fancy. I have to just add, we're thinking about our brothers and sisters in Eretz Yisrael. Yeah. We said Tehillim. We should definitely continue to have them. One member of our shul has two children in the army. Said things from their perspective, from the kids' perspective, who are in the army on the front lines protecting us. Said things have calmed down a little bit since yesterday morning, but we should still, you know, continue to daven for Achenu Kol Beis Yisrael. Okay. We should daven for them, and our learning should be for them also, as well. Next, Vayere Lav Hashem. We're just going two more words. Be'elonei Mamre. Hashem appears to Avraham. Where? In Elonei Mamre. By the way, we know this already. We know where Avraham is. We know that he's in the plains of Mamre. Why does the Torah tell us? One second. Why does the Torah tell us where Avraham is? Yes, your question?
After the first encounter.
This is Lech Lecha. Avraham is 75 years old. Yeah. At this point, Avraham is 99/100. At some point, he turns 100. 99 is when he has a bris milah. 100 is when he has a son. Right. So he's some point there. It's the machlokes, right? Some say here that it was, what time of the year was it? It was Pesach.
Spring.
It was Pesach, right? And if it's Pesach, some say that Avraham's birthday was Aleph Tishrei. So if that's true, then he's going to turn 100 in like six months. Okay, that could be. It could be. Assuming that Medrash is correct, it could be.
Why would you translate Ilane as plains? Isn't Ilan usually a tree?
You're right. Ilan is a tree, but I think Elone is like the way of. I don't know. You're right. But the trees of Mamre, So Rashi writes here a very strange Medrash. Hu shenasan lo eitza al amila, l'fichach nigla eila bechelko. Avraham was given the commandment about the bris milah, and he didn't say yes right away, seemingly. What did he do? He asked his friends. He had Aner Eshkol and Mamre, and he inquired of his friends to ask them what he should do. It's a very, very strange medrash. You know, if God, you know, he doesn't do that when it comes to the Akedah. So what does it mean? So I saw one interpretation this past week. I forgot where I saw it. It wasn't that Avraham had a suffix of whether he should do the Bris Milah or not. Rather, it was whether he should do it privately, Bitsina, or should he do it publicly, Bifarhesia. And Mamre told him, you want to spread your mission of monotheism, right? You should not be embarrassed about anything that you do. Everything should be done in a public manner, right? And again, I think this stresses also just it's a good question as to why Avraham felt the need to ask them. They were not Jewish. They were not following on the Abrahamic path at all. But he had friends. He asked advice. That's also very, very valuable. We still have friends just a moment ago. But this is a very valuable, it's a tool to have friends and not be afraid to ask advice to other people. I think it's very, very valuable. They were good people. They were good people. They came to protect him and take care of him. Yeah.
Was he actually commanded to do it, or did he have an option here? Was it a commandment? Did God command you must do this, or?
Vayomer Hashem, right? Yeah. Vayomer Elokim El Avraham Ata Vataz Brisit Yishmor Ata Vizarecha Charecha L'Dor Sam. It sounds like pretty much he should be doing this, right?
Commanding.
Yeah, you should be doing it. So it is, again, how should he do it? How should he approach it? Even if we challenge, right? It's important to talk about things with our chaver. V'hu yoshev. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What?
How do
we know that? Who they? Friendly with who? No. No, Avraham asked Mamre.
Right.
Mamre was like the nobleman over this this land.
So how did he know he could approach them, trust them?
They had a previous relationship.
Oh.
They had this. They were buddies. They were friends.
There's nowhere in the text that I see that it's obvious that he hesitated about doing a
bris. No.
I mean,
no.
All...
No. It's medrash. Yeah. Yeah.
Why,
yeah.
Then why would they even go there?
Yeah. It's a very. It's. That's Chazal. Okay, that's a good question as to where do they see that. I don't know right now, but it's a good question. It could be Be'elonei Mamre. There's a few. The Medrash comes up here, but I think it comes up a little bit earlier as well.
Did also Avram do all the mitzvos? He basically did.
Right. The Mishnah in Kiddushin says he did all the mitzvos. Oh, so some say, great. That's a classic question that people ask is, how, if Avram did all the mitzvos, right? Medrash writes that. So if he did all the mitzvos, why did he wait for Bris Milah? So it could be that he waited for Bris Milah. Two answers. Either he knew Hashem was going to tell him, and then it's a greater mitzvah to do it when you're commanded than when you're not commanded, that we know. Or he didn't do mitzvos that were going to, that maybe were strange communally, slash were... You know, and would prevent him from doing kiruv that he wanted to do. Or additionally, this was something that was going to cause him tsar. Anything that caused physical tsar, he wasn't going to do unless there was a commandment to do it.
Because you can't do tsar to your body, right?
Correct.
Until God commanded.
Yeah,
The first explanation you gave, I read in Chabad.
Oh, great, great.
That's what
they
were looking at. So he wanted to wait. To show that
he wanted to wait till Hashem commanded him to do it. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
That the power of that mitzvah would be that much more powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And that was his way of looking at
it. Right. So third part of the pasuk, another piece from Rabbi Salvechik, v'hu yoshev pesach ha'ol kechom hayom. He was sitting. What's fascinating here is who is standing and who is sitting over here. God is standing.
Right.
And Abraham is sitting. So the Rav...
Is he speaking to him or is it this in a dream, first of all?
Ooh, so that's a machlokes. That's a machlokes between the Ramban and the Rambam. The Rambam says all of this was from prophecy. It didn't happen in reality. The Ramban, this is not the only time they argue about something like this, but the Ramban says that's so many details. How do you answer dreams like that don't have all those details? And he has numerous other rejections of the Rambam, and he says this happened in reality. That's the way it's taught. The Rambam is difficult. There's another book written by the Holzers on Rabbi Soloveitchik on the Torah, where they deal with this question. They ask the Rav. It's a hard... The Rav gave a very difficult answer, which I can't go into now because I don't have my head around it, as to why... What would compel the Rambam to say that this was all done b'nevuah and not done in reality? And the Rav gave a very hard answer for me to understand. So who... The whole thing, no. The whole thing with the malachim, the whole thing even was still, it all was one big mara chalom.
Wow.
Well, one mara nevuah.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay.
But the words even implied that it's not the dream.
Right.
It says gechom hayom. Gechom.
Yeah. Right. That's what Ramban was saying. Like, when it comes to, you don't have that many details. They're so specific here. What exactly they ate, where they sat, the tree that they sat over gave them shade. There's so many details.
Now,
which
Shem is writing the Torah, so Shem's writing this, not Abraham.
Right, but they give us hints to that. That's like Hashem wouldn't do that, right? That the argument I think would be then Hashem wouldn't do that. You know, he wouldn't give that many hints. He would want to teach us where this is and what the setting was to hint it to us in a certain way. So the Rav points out, "Hu Yoshev, he is sitting, and God is standing," right? Which is a little bit funny. Because usually when
you get up,
a dignified person comes into the room,
right.
What do we do?
But he did.
I mean, we stand up.
But he did.
So the Rav says like this, it must have been, right? It must have been that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu appeared to Avraham, Avraham jumped up, right? And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, no. You sit down. So number one, we learn from here, by the way, that someone who's doing Bikur Cholim should stand over the person. Obviously, if that's comfortable. But like, they shouldn't like stand away. They should be near the person. Because then they feel like it's closer. It's more endearing than just standing, you know, in the corner of the hospital room. So that's one. But he points out, the Rav points out over here that Kadosh Baruch Hu was teaching Avram a lesson. Avram, you're acting, by you standing up, you're acting like the host, and you're treating me like the guest. But in reality, what's what?
First.
I am the host, and you're the guest. Because I am the, as Rabbi Yehuda would say, the host with the capital H. I am the ultimate. I am the ultimate host. That's why I am standing, right? And you are the guest. You are the guest. This is my home. The whole world is my home. And then the Rav says something really fascinating, because we can compare this to what happens in courts in, I think, at least in America. So the halacha is that when judges adjudicate, should they be sitting or standing? Sitting. Judges should be sitting when they, even when they mete out their judgment, they should be sitting down.
Not the jury.
Right?
The jury gets up.
Oh, so one second. So what does the pasuk say? Every single time that judges adjudicate, Hashem is there. Elokim nitzav ba'adaskel. That God is standing, right, in this Eda, in this communal gathering. So he says, why is that? Because what are the judges reflecting? That we ultimately are not judging this case based on what we think. It's not our logic that we're using. It's a Kadosh Baruch Hu's logic. We are not the hosts of this meeting. We are just emissaries representing what the ultimate, right, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu thinks, what his will is, right? We trained and worked really hard for this. It's not us. It's God. So who is standing in a courtroom? HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is standing in a courtroom, and we are all sitting.
So when it comes to a court... In, this is all rise.
All right. So there's a lot of standing in the courtroom, right? The whole jury has to stand up, all the defendants, everyone has to stand up, right, in the beginning, but at the end also, when they pass off their judgments, which is not the sentencing, this is against, right? It's a fascinating point that the Rav makes about who is sitting, who is standing, and who is the ultimate host. Then Hashem told him, no. You're the, right? We do stand in shul. I'm not saying it's a bad thing to stand. But there's a lesson to be learned about who is the host and who is the guest. I think it's a valuable lesson. One last idea. The Rav points out here, right? Avraham, what do we see? What chesed are we focusing on? Avraham was the master of chesed. He's the ultimate Baal chesed. The chesed that we're referring to here is the chesed of Hachnasas Orchem. So, right, if we had to go around the room, we'd say, okay, what do I do? What chesed do I do? I give tzedakah. And tzedakah is very, very valuable, right? People need tzedakah for lots of different, to pay their rent, to pay their, you know, mortgages, to pay their utility bills, to pay their schooling, medications. Tzedakah is so, so important. But he says, when we want to highlight how Avraham is the ultimate Baal Chesed, the story the Torah gives is a case of Hachnasas Orchem. Why is that? So the Rav writes that giving tzedakah demonstrates sympathy. Right? We care. We care. We care so much to the extent that I'm going to take my hard-earned money. It's really not my money. I'm earning it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us our money. And I'm going to give that to other people that need it. That is empathy, that is sympathy, that is such an important trait. But what does the Torah want to emphasize here with the Hachnasas Orchem?
You're doing it for yourself.
It's not just a mitzvah sheb. I think you can argue it's a mitzvah sheb guf. You're doing it yourself. And he says,
You own it.
You own it. You're doing it. You're demonstrating full human equality. By you saying, hey, you come into my home and you sit down at my table. You eat my food. You sleep in one of my beds, right? You enjoy the luxuries that I enjoy in my house. What essentially are you saying? We're the same, right? Either you made some bad decisions, either, you know, whatever reason, life has been difficult to you. But ultimately, by allowing this person to enter your home and taking care of them, putting them under your own roof, you're saying, hey, we're the same. We are all equal in the eyes of God. That's what, right? It wasn't just Avraham had sympathy. We need that. We need the tzedakah. It's not a question. But it wasn't just only about that. There's a level of dignity that is required of man too. That's actually why it's true when it comes to tzedakah.
Also the fact is that tzedakah, you might not be able to afford to give much, but if you give of yourself, as much as, you know.
It's a mitzvah sheba guf. Right. Mitzvah sheba guf. When it comes to tzedakah, part of the mitzvah is de machsaro. You have to sometimes replenish what they were used to in the past. It's a good question if you can help two people, but not help one person to get them de machsaro, help two people equal footing, which is better. But right, ideally, de machsaro, the halacha is, get them, the Gemara's example is, if someone's used to two horses, give them two horses. Okay, we have a limited communal funds, but if we had all the money we have, then maybe that's what we should be doing, because then we're not just helping the guy out, we're giving the person his dignity back, right? And that's what Avraham is doing by b'machnas orchem. He's giving people a sense of dignity with who they are, and that's the value the Torah places on this and what they want to emphasize and teach us about the uniqueness of Avraham Avinu. So we discussed three ideas just in the first pasuk itself, Vayera Elav. There's no hello. There's no introduction. Introductions were not needed between Avraham and Hashem. Be'elone Mamre, right? Why Mamre of all people? What he do? And then why was Avraham sitting and a Kaddish Baruch Hu was standing? And finally, we discussed the difference between tzedakah and hachnasas orchim.